There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you along. And weekend ahead actually looks a little better than it was earlier in the week. Rain looks like it's a nighttime thing, but we'll get more from staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams coming up at around 1:35. All right, text line is open for you as well. And yeah, obviously I was not the only one to have seen this new litter, the rubber gloves litter. Listen, use the rubber gloves. You want to do that. Although, like Dalton and I talked during the break, I guess somebody had called and said they see people using the same gloves all day. Use the gloves somewhere you're worried about, if you're pumping gas or whatever, and then throw them away in a trash can. Quit leaving stuff out there. Y'all quit being nasty out there, all right? Have some sense. Have some sense. Act right. It's all we got to do. If everybody acts right, thinks about somebody else more than themselves, we'll get through this sooner than later. Right, I want to bring on a guest. I mentioned last hour we talk about the technology aspect of working at home and telecommuting. You know, we've talked about it a bunch this week. We've had some specialists on to talk about how to really set up a home office, how to take that seriously, that getting up, taking a shower, having that space in your home that is your home office, working there, kind of how to navigate the distractions, which I got a house full of distractions. Two-legged distractions, four-legged distractions, a bunch of them, and how to navigate that stuff. I think a lot of people are trying to figure that out. But as we use more and more of bandwidth from our home and not our office, we've got some challenges out there. And I know that's something they look at daily over at BIS. And Philip Long, founder and CEO of BIS, is joining us right now. Thanks for being on.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me, Sean.
So your company, talk about what y'all do. What is BIS? What does that stand for? And what do y'all do like on a non-corona day?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it stands for Business Information Solutions, and we've been in business for actually this month. It'll be 19 years. So we are really in the technical word for us is an MSSP, which stands for a Managed Service Security Provider, which is doesn't probably mean anything to your guests, but we take care of computer networks for really the small to mid-sized business space, and for some even larger companies where we focus on being the security officer for the company. But ultimately, we sell and maintain computer networks and really all the components it takes to make an office run. The copiers and printers. I have a marketing company, with the day-to-day operations, email. We do Office 365, and just really the things for companies that don't have an on-staff IT company.
All right, so let's talk about this, Philip, because a lot of those networks are now, they're truly a virtual network because there's people at their homes all over telecommuting back into the office or through the network to get their work done. So now that pressure is, not at the big office building, it's at the house.
Sure. Yeah, it's great that we live in an environment where that's even possible.
Yeah.
Even just a few, 5 years back, that would have been such a hill, to climb. But today we have it. But the thing that we want to really think about is doing that securely. There is already a lot of attacks that are happening that are very strategic and very specific to people not being in and behind that protection of, say, a good firewall that they have at the office and things like that. So there is a lot of risk that comes with it.
Now, do you think the bad guys, I'm going to ask a dumb question, but I probably already know the answer. Do you think the bad guys are aware of all these people that are now at their homes transmitting what could be very, very important information or something they could work off of?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, these guys are actually, I just did a big study for a presentation that I made, and this is data, very recent data. These are not like a bad guy. These are literally teams of bad guys that are very well educated, very well funded, and very knowledgeable as to what's going on in the world. So we got to take our mindset away from the guy in the hoodie in their mama's basement and put it into really more of a an executive, you know, a hacking company. If we thought of a, you know, a bunch of, you know, professionals, that's what their skill set is. So yeah, they know it. And really, if you follow, you know, they release information. There's channels that you can, they'll talk about what they're doing. And one of the good things is they have you know, proclaimed, and so far from what I can see from a security perspective, they're holding up to it. They're not hacking hospitals right now. So there is a little honor amongst thieves, but for the average Joe at home, you're prime target still.
Yeah, that's got to be, I mean, worrisome, from what you do and for the businesses, that this information that has been protected by companies like yours, you know, through firewalls and all that, is in some cases probably being transmitted from the laptop that's sitting there on the kitchen table.
Sure. Yeah, and you know, even the you know, I deal with this all day, and we have literally been setting up people. You know, I'm also an entrepreneur and a business guy, and I am very much focused on, let's keep this economy going the very best that we can, guys. Yes. I mean, I get it. This is painful. It's painful for me. It's painful for everyone. And anything that we can do to keep the ball rolling, and those who do keep the ball rolling are going to come out of this a lot better, because yep, it's easier, you know, to start from a rolling start than it is from a dead stop. But yeah, that's right. You got a laptop that your kid's been playing games on. You don't have any clue of what's on it, and now all of a sudden you're connecting to a business network with that, you know, is something to be considered.
Okay, so if you just define somebody, they're listening, riding down the road, Philip, and said, yeah, that's me, what do you do? Where do you even start with this?
Yeah, we kind of have a process, and it's not so overwhelming that it can't be done. We have some tools that we put on the machine, basically software, and I'll give you a statistic based off the study I just did. This is in Q4 of last year, so this is pretty recent. 75 or 76% of computers that are network servers, computers all together, that got ransomware, you know, where they basically encrypt the files, mm-hmm, they had desktop security, what we would call antivirus, on them. You need to have a more of a defense in depth strategy, and the way we're doing it now for the users, I'll tell you, you know, and I mean, anybody could do this themselves if they're so inclined, but we're using a DNS, which basically is a gateway. We use Cisco provides a product that is a gateway so that all your traffic flows through them, and then we're sure to patch all the machines that are outside with a tool we use that keeps all the systems patches, and we use what's called in our industry a next generation endpoint, or really antivirus, that's watching for behaviors. So we verify that the machine is clean, we pass it through, we'll call it a cloud-based firewall for a layman term, and then we're running a sophisticated product on that machine that is managing the security on it. So it's really three layers, whereas we would actually have more in a network environment. We would have a firewall in place and maybe even a server that's controlling permissions. But, you know, for compared to what a lot of people have, they're just taking and popping open their laptop, mm-hmm, or whatever, and they're punching into their business network. It's really a big step forward in the overall protection.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I would worry about, and we have part of our staff now that is doing that same thing. They're telecommuting, and okay, so they open up their laptop, and they've got to access the server. Basically, I would like to know, if their computer gets compromised, is there a way to protect that information's on the network? How much of that stuff that they're accessing, you know, can the bad guy or the teams of people get, or can they breach because that computer's connected through to the server? Can they breach through that computer and get into the server? I guess is what I'm trying to figure out.
Absolutely, and they can. You know, it depends on how it's set up, of course, but there's a big kind of a threat that's called, they're calling it persistent threat. And what's going on is they drop a little file. Say you open up something in email, is one way that it's very, very predominant in the way that it happens, is they open up an email, and the number one thing in emails is fake invoices. Because, again, you see this invoice come in, you're like, I didn't buy that, and double-click on it. Boom. They drop a little file on your computer that is actually not malicious.
Huh.
And they will take things that are that Windows uses, like Command Prompt and PowerShell and tools that are, you know, that are part of the Windows operating system, and then they'll go out and they'll download a file. And having not a good firewall at home, you're not really looking at the traffic. Your computer asked for it, therefore it comes back to your computer. There's no check and balance system to check and say, hey, are you going to a shady neighborhood on the internet? What's in your pockets when you come back in, you know, to look and see what's inside of that data? And then they begin to build a Frankenstein monster that will steal keystrokes. You know, they may just steal all of your keystrokes, and then they know where you're punching into your office. They have your username, they have your passwords, they're capturing your email, and again, they just collect data for a minute.
Wow.
And then they determine what to do with that data, how to exfiltrate it, how to exploit it, and so on and so on.
Okay, so the original file that comes in, maybe attached in the email or whatever, it seems innocuous if you just looked at it. Maybe even the virus scan on that home computer would say, yeah, that's something supposed to be there. But somewhere in it, like a Trojan horse, it goes and brings other things in then to that computer and then to the network.
Exactly. They call that a botnet, or there's a whole lot of terms, but it's a basis of a MITRE, MITRE, if anyone cared to look that up. It's a MITRE attack, and the tools that I was speaking of earlier that we use specifically look for those types of exploits. They're run in basically series, and the software, the protection software, is looking for that series to happen, and much of those series of activities are in and of themselves not something that would trigger even a standard desktop antivirus. There are things inside of Windows running something in a task scheduler to do at a later time. You know, the computer does that. You know, that's part of the operating system. So the antivirus doesn't see that as a threat. But when you string these activities together, they're you know, creating a bomb out of you know, fertilizer, which is a good thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And diesel fuel, which is a good thing, right? But ultimately, when you put it all together and package it correctly, it can be very damaging.
That may be the best analogy I've ever heard for that. That makes sense to a lot of folks. So what do you tell them, Philip, as people are sitting there, they've now heard you talk, now you've gotten their attention. So talk to the business owners and talk to the end users, the people that work and telecommute. What do they need to be doing? What do they need to be asking?
Absolutely. They need to have to make sure that the device that they're starting to connect with is clean. That's step one. Step two, they need to make sure that the connectivity between the device, your home laptop, let's say, and the office is done in a secure manner. We can't open ports like we used to, because the bad actors will jump in there and we'll get hit hard. And then other just basic you know, security things. And I tell you, as an entrepreneur, and I mean, I'm doing this as a guy, we are giving away free audits to define those things for people. And we're also, for a simple setup, I have some relationships with some software companies that are allowing us to use their software for 90 days for free.
Wow.
And we're giving away that, you know, we're giving away those the service as well as the tools to securely connect business owners, because, you know, we want to do our part to keep this, you know, keep people safe. Of course, that's first and foremost.
Right.
But once that's accomplished, we want to be able to keep this economy going.
Well said. Well said. So do we all. Where, you know, 100% of us are affected by this coronavirus fight in the economy. That is for sure. So is this something that you do remotely? And I want to give some contact info. I mean, if people want to engage in this, is this something that you log on and do, or do you physically have to have that computer?
No, usually we can do all of this remotely. There might be, again, depending upon the scenario, and it's, you know, it's a hodgepodge of different things, but 90% of this we can do remotely, and we can, you know, make sure. I'm very curious to see, because I didn't mention this, but I'm also a certified information system security professional, which again means nothing to
What is that, Philip? What does that mean?
It's one of the very highest cybersecurity certifications you can get. And ultimately, that one I got probably 3 or 4 years ago, primarily just seeing the cybersecurity risk coming. But to me, it's more for a guy like me. I'm a business guy. I'm an entrepreneur, and I understand how business works, and I understand the challenges of ease of use and security and all that. But ultimately, it is a structured thing that mathematically arrives at risk. I'm trained to mathematically assess risk using the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which is a government thing. So it's kind of one of those things that's really hard to understand until you understand it, but it has some very practical purposes in serving the business of the interest of, you know, the business owner, so that they understand that your data, they have to understand that their data is more valuable than cash.
That's for sure.
Because data can be extracted and used in multiple ways to deliver cash, right?
That is for sure, and it can absolutely cut your ability to get new cash flow off. So that is...
Oh, absolutely.
It's always a worry. Quick way, if somebody wants to contact you or the team there, phone number, what's best?
Yeah, they could just simply call our main help desk. We are still up and running. We have probably 80% of our office working from home, but we're an essential service, and we're doing our part. We have, 100% of my team is still working. I'm very proud of that. But all they have to do is call the help desk at 251-405-2555, or they can email me directly, and it's plong at askbis.com.
Hey, Philip, we appreciate your time and your advice, and we'll be checking back in with you soon.
Great, man. Thank you for having me, and everybody stay safe out there.
Well said. Thank you very much, Philip Long, and we're coming right back. More of Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 128 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday. Got to get into this a little bit more when it comes to I think next week's subject matter will be masks. Mask, mask, mask. As the White House saying, expect an advisory and facial coverings in the next 3 days. You know, and this is not the N95 mask or N99. These are like bandanas and scarves. And listen, I see y'all's text. I don't know. I mean, the people are saying, well, that doesn't do any good. It's not going to filter out. Keith has sent me some bandana pictures here. That it's not going to filter out the coronavirus. Yeah, I don't know why. I'm not here to tell you what works and doesn't work. I'm just telling you that now we went from it not being masked before to now, well, not N95 masks, but you can wear some other kind of mask. That seems to be what's being telegraphed here, that that's coming, right? Then I saw a story here. Let me find this. We'll probably have to talk about this after we check in with Dr. Bill and Westwood One News. But there's a story about what the mandatory requirements were, because you hear that, I think it was Laredo, Texas, right, talking about requiring masks of citizens outside their house. And this goes back to the Spanish flu pandemic, 1918-1919, and the city of San Francisco that did enact a mandatory mask law back then. Now, there were a lot of things. It's interesting to read these stories about Spanish flu in 1918, 1919, because a lot of the things we're doing now, I mean, not much has changed. They did social distancing. They had quarantines. They had school closures, banning public gatherings. But they also did this wearing of a mask. Back then, and I think when we were probably a little more pliable, and maybe, sadly, we're more patriotic back then than we are now, they said it was your patriotic duty to wear the mask. Didn't you hear the president the other day say it's patriotic duty to do the 30 days, to stay at home for 30 days? Well, we'll get to this story. It's from, think.com. Pretty interesting take on that. We'll get back. We'll get that story and your calls at 343-0106. Check in with Westwood One and Dr. Bill, then we'll be right back. Shot this one.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Go ahead and answer Billy's text right here on the air. It says, question here, are you reporting deaths from the virus? And I have been, Billy, for Alabama and surrounding states, mostly focused on Alabama. We could talk about the national numbers as well. But one thing that I've been doing, and Dalton has been doing as well, is which death number. This is such a weird thing to be talking about in this method, but I mean, I just got to say what it is. So we talk about the confirmed number of cases in the state, but there's two different numbers. There's right now we're up to, by the way, it's coming up again, 1,414 confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Alabama as of just a little bit ago. And if you look at the stats coming out from ADPH, it'll say 1,414 confirmed cases of COVID-19, 34 reported deaths, 21 died from this illness. So, Billy, the number we've talked about is the 21, and that's the smaller number. The reason, in my mind, is that that's the important number people are looking at. If somebody has a case of, I said it this morning, just for an extreme example, if I'm COVID-19 positive, I have a confirmed case, and I walk outside and get run over by a bus, sure, I have COVID and I'm dead. But that's not what people are looking at and wondering about that. They're worried about the people that are dying from COVID-19. So that's why we report the smaller of the two numbers. I think that's the important one. 1,414 cases and 21 died in the state of Alabama.
Yeah, and Mobile's cases have been climbing pretty rapidly. Yeah,
four fatalities now?
Four fatalities. There are five reported deaths. So that's one of those that they're investigating right now. But also we're up to 84 confirmed cases in Mobile County now. I think we were at 69 overnight. So they're adding to that by the hour, it looks like. And I imagine as more test results come in, we'll see that number rise, not just for Mobile County, but for counties around the state. And we're now also down to only three counties in the entire state that have yet to have a confirmed COVID-19 case. We've seen that number dwindle, but in some of these more rural counties where they didn't get testing until late or weren't able to test until recently, you got Perry, Geneva, and Henry counties, the only counties left that do not have a confirmed case. And Baldwin County's number now up to 26 confirmed cases.
All right, we'll keep our eyes on these. But Billy, thanks for the text. You can always drop us a line at 343-0106. Also works for a phone call. We'll quickly run through a story I mentioned before the break. It's from NBC News in their opinion, analysis, and essays section called Think. It's Howard Markle, and the headline here says, coronavirus mask guidance remains unclear. Here's how history can help. And I think this is a pretty good read. I'm going to put this out on Twitter in a second. You read through the history of the 1918-19 Spanish flu pandemic, and they said as it played out in San Francisco, I want to drill into this part of the story. It said, the frenzy over masks reminds me of the of course, this guy must be a weird dude. It reminds me of 1918-1919 influenza pandemic, particularly as it played out in San Francisco, which enacted a mandatory mask law. So we heard that Laredo, Texas thing where they're talking about a mandatory law. So back then, they did this.
Yeah, I saw a picture from back then, and it showed a family, and they were holding signs that said, wear a mask or go to jail.
Yeah, so this is back then, masked up. They said most other major American cities ordered standard social distancing regulations like quarantines, school closures, and bans on public gatherings. San Francisco's law proved less effective because the city did not also implement robust distancing, social distancing measures. For many Americans during the pandemic, wearing a mask became a symbol of patriotism as we sent the doughboys off to fight World War I. Although wearing masks may now give the public a sense of security, I worry that for the most part, it might convince wearers that they are safe from an infection when they are not. It might also lull wearers into letting down their guard on social distancing and potentially spreading COVID-19 virus. Said the U.S. populace, medical experts now estimate, will put on and dispose of more than 3.5 billion, billion of those flapping mouth and nose guards before the pandemic has ended. Mask manufacturers have told the Department of Health and Human Services that it could take months to meet demand. Many Americans, as their predecessors did during the 1918-1919 influenza pandemic, are fashioning their own masks or sewing them in support of hard-pressed medical personnel. A major problem with most surgical masks, which are made of woven cloth or paper products, is that they force the wearer's breath against the material that can open microscopic holes in the fabric. The longer you wear one, the more microscopic holes. The virus is even smaller than the holes, so it can travel through them, transmitting the disease. And there's a lot more to the story or this this op-ed here, or really history lesson. I'm going to pump this up on the Twitter feed. Just look for it at FM Talk 106.5 on Twitter. But I think it's interesting that back then in 18 and 19, that it was something that was done wearing the mask. These masks don't look like they were really protecting you from much, but it became a patriotic sign to wear a mask. And then I remember hearing the president talk, maybe it was Tuesday, and said it's our patriotic duty to shelter in place and do all this stuff. All right, now let's get to the, you ready for some the hard-hitting news about COVID-19?
Yeah, some real hard-hitting stuff.
And I want to point out, too, before Dalton delivers this headline, that one of my favorite moments of Tiger King so far, and spoiler alert, finally there's a show I've seen some episodes of that my friend here, Dalton, has not.
I haven't.
But there's a scene in it where Joe Exotic has a reason. I don't want to spoil this thing, but there's a medical emergency going on at the Tiger Park, and he somehow shows up in a leather jacket with the medical staff on the back, like a bomber jacket. He goes and has a costume change for the medical emergency. Okay, so go ahead.
Okay, yeah. And as someone who still has not seen Tiger King, but has seen just about every meme about it on the internet, this headline, I mean, 2 months ago, no one would have known what in the world was going on with this headline. Maybe not 2 months, but go back to 2019. If you read this headline, you'd say, what? Okay. Here's the headline. Tiger King's Joe Exotic hospitalized and could have caught coronavirus in prison.
So none of those terms would have made sense to somebody.
No one would know.
In November, at Thanksgiving of this last year, this last Thanksgiving, nothing there would have made any sense to anybody.
Coronavirus, Joe Exotic, Tiger King. Unless you went to Joe Exotic's circus, tiger sanctuary there or whatever, then you'd probably know who
Joe Exotic, who those of us that have been watching it know the whole premise. He's in, it starts off, and you know that he's in prison the whole time.
Yeah.
That's what they start. And if it wasn't for Carol, that. but so Joe Exotic, who in one of the episodes, there's a medical emergency and he goes for a costume change and shows up with his EMS bomber jacket on to watch the real emergency workers do their thing. So he's now contracted COVID-19.
Possibly. So, and they haven't confirmed it yet, but I guess, and this is a spoiler.
He is somebody who would, just a side note, he was somebody who would give himself somehow COVID-19
for
the publicity. Yes. I'm not saying he did, but I'm saying he did.
So here's the spoiler for me and for everyone else. I guess he is serving a 22-year sentence here. So he's been in jail, and they have had to isolate him in jail because one of his fellow inmates was tested positive for COVID-19. And since then, it looks like now he's been moved out of that jail and into the Federal Medical Center in Fort Worth, which is operated by the Bureau of Prisons. So to me, we don't have a positive test for Joe Exotic, but if they're moving him...
we got a positive on Joe Exotic.
And you wouldn't believe who's telling this news. I guess it was passed along by... this can't be right. Joe Exotic's fourth husband? Is that right?
Somebody we had two at one time. I'm going to spoil all
I
this
guess,
stuff.
Yeah, I guess this is full of... 24-year-old bartender Dylan Passage has passed this along. So, you know, Joe Exotic... It looks like he might have contracted COVID-19 because he's now in the health center.
There you go. So now you got to go, watch some Netflix and get caught up. And just when you see the scene I'm talking about, where he has the costume change, like he's not wearing the jacket, and once this thing happens, it's like a major thing. Then he shows back up and he's gone. So he's gone to the house and changed his jacket. It's rich.
I'll have to show you O.J. Simpson's take on Tiger King.
No. All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, back in studio with Ruth Lichtenfeld from Taylor Martino. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you for having me.
It's always good to have you here, and there's so much I want to talk about. The first thing, though, I want to talk about this because we mentioned it last time you were here, and I think it's something we got to point out that, or let me ask you the question. I'll set it up this way. Is it true that you are the only nurse who's also a personal injury attorney in our area?
Yes. To my knowledge, that's still correct.
So two dedications there take a lot of time through school, and you did them both.
Yes, I did.
This is obviously puts you in a unique situation when it comes to personal injury because you deal with the law, but you also know the physical injury.
Yes, that's correct. And, you know, like nurses, lawyers, especially those at Taylor Martino, were passionate advocates for those who need our help.
Yeah, I guess some of the tools you use will be different between the two, but yeah, you're helping people.
That's right. People still come to us when they're in need of help, be it nursing or the law. We assess their problem, we listen to their concerns, we do some research to figure out how we can help them through either medicine or the law, and then we execute our plan. We plan how to help them, applying the body of law knowledge that applies, and then we, you know, help that person.
And you're looking at injuries. There's injuries, physical injuries, but also as a personal injury attorney, you can see what that means going down the road. Well, that might be a physical injury now, but you know what that injury is to future earnings or
exactly.
Their quality of life.
Exactly. The negligence of others can impact the entire life of someone who's injured. It's the mental anguish, the pain and suffering, the effect on their relationship with their spouse, their children, their income. Maybe they can't work any longer. Maybe they can't do the same job, and so their earning ability decreases. It can be a tremendous myriad of issues that are caused by the negligence of others.
Well, you know, we picture this, Ruth, like we all have this picture of the arc of our life, right? Mm-hmm. Here's what we're going to do. I'm on my way. We're doing this, that, and the other. To be frank with you, none of us stop and think, well, what happens if that gets cut short? You
right.
know, I mean,
well,
it's just something we don't do every day. I know y'all have to do it at Taylor Martino because you deal with people that are seeing this, but this is real. This is real impact. These are real impacts.
It is. And we talk to people all the time who minding their own business, seatbelt buckled, going the speed limit, and somebody runs a red light on their text, they're texting or phoning or surfing the web while they're driving and run into our client, and their life is forever changed in many cases.
You know, I know at Taylor Martino, you'll pride yourself on the forensic ability in
right.
those situations.
Right.
Let's talk about that because you had another seminar. Y'all constantly learning more and more about this.
Right.
What, like, give people an idea how y'all deal with this, how you look into those situations where the person you just described doing the speed limit, seatbelt on, doing right, they get hit.
Yeah, they get hit. And it's very important to contact us at Taylor Martino for a couple of reasons. We are your best advocate. Insurance companies are not going to look out for your interest, period. That's just not the other person's insurance. Your own insurance may be different. But you need to contact us as soon as possible so we can gather all the evidence we need against the person who caused the wreck. They are called the tortfeasor. And so we need to gather all the evidence as quickly as possible. There's so much technology available now that we can actually pinpoint the location of the tortfeasor's cell phone by getting forensic evidence, tower pinging the cell phone. We can download their data, their text messaging, the all of that is date and time stamped. And so we want to be hired by the person who's injured as quick as possible so that we can gather all that evidence before the evidence starts to disappear by the tortfeasor, because they get worried they're going to get sued. But there's a tremendous amount of information that we can gather, but it's important to get to us quickly so we can evaluate all the facts.
When you get that information, it must be a relief to your clients, because I'm sure they're in these situations where they know they were in the right, the other person was in the wrong, but the person say, I didn't do anything wrong. Right. It wasn't me.
I have rarely had a tortfeasor who said, yes, I did it. You know, take my insurance money. Their insurance company's job is to defend every single claim that the injured party, who is our client, can make. And so it's always an adversarial relationship. That's mm-hmm. why we recommend you don't talk to the other driver's insurance company. Don't do a recorded statement. Don't let them gather evidence against you. But just contact us. We have over 100 years, I think, of experience among all the lawyers. It may be 150. I don't want to date myself or my partners. but there's a lot of experience. Yeah, a lot of experience and wisdom. And with the advance of technology, you know, we are really, really, really very thorough, and we do not leave anything on the table. We are highly aggressive. And I've told people before not to underestimate me, because I'm soft-spoken. You know, there's nobody that wants more than I to do what's best for the client and recover what they deserve.
And you said something there, too, that's just a takeaway for people to keep in there, that they need to talk to y'all before they take that call from the insurance company of the people that hit them.
Right, right, right.
But people don't know that, right? People think, oh, they called, I got to talk to them.
We talk to people all day long. We screen calls. We tell you what we think. You know, can we help you? We want you to come in, sit down, and talk to us. We want you to know what your rights are under the law. Don't hesitate. We're never too busy to sit down and talk with you. If you have a question, do you have a case or not?
Let's talk about this, too. We talk about your uniqueness as a nurse who's also a personal injury attorney. We talked car wrecks, but that's a pretty big umbrella, personal injury attorney. There's a lot more that goes under that.
Yeah, it's a massive umbrella. There's personal injury from car wrecks, slip and fall in a grocery store and somebody's retail store. There's defective products like allergen breast implants or hernia mesh. There's pharmaceutical issues. We have cases where medicines have caused people to have cancer. We represent people in all types of personal injury. It doesn't have to be a car wreck.
But if they have an injury, like you said, you've been seeing them as a nurse for all those years and then mm-hmm. so many years as a personal injury attorney. All right. So, Ruth, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, get an appointment to see you, how do they do that?
They can call me directly at Taylor Martino, 433-3131, or by email on our website, taylormartino.com.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.